Ryan, the proposal from Japan's Nippon Steel to essentially acquire United States Steel, if you could give our listeners a bit of background as to what made a deal like this necessary and what was the deal that Nippon put on the table?
What made it necessary is that U.S. Steel is not the company that it used to be. They have some great infrastructure and some great physical plants. They have some pretty talented workers on staff. But the company has essentially become a welfare case over the last several decades due to a mix of subsidies and tariffs and other special treatment from the government. They don't compete in a free market, and because of that, U.S. Steel has gone soft. So in a global market, they're not competitive, and U.S. Steel knows this. What Nippon Steel sees is they see that great physical plant and all the talent they have at the company, and with their experience competing in something more closely resembling a free market, which they're able to successfully compete in, if they can take what U.S. Steel has and modernize it and make it better, they can create a lot more value with what's there than what U.S. Steel is doing with its fossilized welfare case structure. So it's a win-win for U.S. Steel employees, most of whom support the deal. It's a win for U.S. Steel shareholders, who will get a very good price compared to other offers that they've received. And the U.S. Steel industry will get a boost. And then as far as politics, which is what this deal unfortunately has devolved into, it's a deal that could benefit America's foreign policy interests as well.
I did find it interesting, Ryan, that at the same time as President Biden was putting the kibosh to this deal, at least temporarily, the United States was simultaneously selling more armaments to Japan. So how do you square this is a national security risk to have the Nippon U.S. Steel deal go through, but it's okay if we sell the missiles and other weapons?
You don't square it because it cannot be squared. The U.S. has had a formal defense alliance with Japan since 1951. Japan is either our single largest foreign investor or it's in the top three along with Canada and Mexico year after year. And in fact, the $14 billion in the U.S. Steel potential acquisition would amount to roughly 2% of what Japanese companies invest in the U.S. in a typical year. The U.S. is the world's top magnet for foreign investments, and it's by a lot. It's because we have talented workforce, better economic and political institutions than a lot of other countries. If you want to invest your money somewhere where entrepreneurs can put it to good use, the U.S. is the best place in the world. And this is an example of Nippon Steel. If they're going to make an investment, they're coming to the U.S. They're not investing in China or in Russia. They're investing in America. This is something that should be encouraged, and to use national security grounds that are evidence-free, I think, is a disservice. It shows that President Biden and a lot of GOP opposition as well is purely about politics and not about the merits.
From the standpoint of U.S. Steel, many of their facilities in the Mon Valley and elsewhere, Ryan, are aging infrastructure. Is it really critical for the future of U.S. Steel that they do attract major investment to upgrade these plants?
It is. They're not going to do it themselves. They don't have the capabilities or, frankly, the capital. They need that infusion of capital from Nippon Steel, and frankly, they need expertise that they do not have in-house that Nippon Steel does have. They did get an offer from one of their competitors, Cleveland Cliffs. That offer was between half and two-thirds of what Nippon Steel offered. So if you're a shareholder or an employee at U.S. Steel, that's not the offer that you want to take. And also, they're bogged down by a lot of the same labor union concerns and cronyism concerns that have caused U.S. Steel's problems in the first place. It's another American welfare case company instead of someplace that has experience competing in a free market and that knows what the modern steel industry is like. There's a lot going on there.
In terms of the labor unions, you mentioned earlier here, Ryan, that a lot of the union members are in favor of the Nippon deal. It would basically ensure their future, make sure that steelmaking continues to take place in southwestern Pennsylvania, elsewhere in the country. Yet the leadership of the union has been very aggressively opposed. Do you see a problem between the union leaders and their members here?
I do. And again, one of the most common mistakes in politics is to confuse labor unions with actual laborers, different groups, different interests. Here we have a lot of U.S. Steel employees wanting the job security, wanting the new technology and innovations and the improved workplace safety that modern technology would bring. And then you have union leadership that wants to freeze things in place or go back to some 1950s golden age that never was. Those are two different visions. And unfortunately, the union leaders, as opposed to the union members' vision, is so far being more successful politically.
We are talking with Ryan Young of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We're talking about the proposal of Nippon Steel, based in Japan, to essentially take over U.S. Steel, based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The deal on tenterhooks right now. President Joe Biden has quashed it for now. We're going to talk about where things may go to from here in just a minute. But Ryan, taking a look at the deal, what was it that Nippon Steel was offering U.S. Steel that would have made this a deal that would have secured the future of that particular company in America?
Expertise, modern technology, and then as sweeteners in order to attract political support, they also threw in a guarantee of no layoffs for at least 10 years. I believe they threw in $2 billion extra for some other sweeteners to make politicians happy. And essentially, they would have saved the company. And that's not an exaggeration. U.S. Steel has been heading downhill for decades, and they're trying to do something about it. And good for them on doing that, because there's a lot of great technology and a lot of great history there.
Ryan, we did see that divide between union members and union leadership. There's also a big political divide. You have Joe Biden, who's opposed to the deal. President-elect Donald Trump, who is opposed to the deal. Pennsylvania's U.S. senators, one from each party, opposed to the deal. Yet, at the local level, you have mayors, you have the president pro tempore, Kim Ward of the Pennsylvania Senate, in support of it. So why the political divide? Some of the elected officials seem to think this is a great thing, and others not so much.
I think the main reason is that it was an election year, and Pennsylvania happened to be a swing state. So you had both parties very aggressively trying to court what they thought was an important voting block in an important election. And I think that's the long and the short of it. It's obviously not about the merits of the issue. Japan is no security threat. We need foreign investment to keep American manufacturing strong. And frankly, we need Japan also as an ally against China. So it hits all the political issues that people really care about in as far as favoring the deal. But because of some people having a vision of U.S. Steel needs to be American-owned, American manufacturing needs to be the same way it was in the 1950s. That sense of nostalgia, some politicians think, appeals to swing voters. And during an election year, that trumps all else.
Indeed, it did. Now, we have President Biden, who has nixed the deal, said he's opposed to it, doesn't want to let it go forward. The next steps, U.S. Steel, Nippon Steel, now headed to court?
Yes, and there's something else going on, too. There is a board called CFIUS, Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S. And the CFIUS board has the final say on all large transactions like Nippon Steel, big foreign investment deals. They were deadlocked. So when Biden came in and said, I'm going to block this deal, what he did was he broke that deadlock. And what that CFIUS panel does is they now have 30 days to reach a final decision. And that 30-day period overlaps when President Trump comes into office. So Biden, it looked like he was putting the kibosh on the deal, but he's really kicking the can down the road. And while I don't necessarily expect President Trump to approve the deal because he's opposed it in the past, that option remains live. And then both U.S. Steel and Nippon Steel have sued because they believe, rightly I think, that CFIUS's deadlock and President Biden's veto of the deal were based on politics and not about the national security concerns that they were legally obligated to review. So I think they have a strong case, but I don't know if a judge will uphold it. And I'm a little skeptical that President Trump, when he has the opportunity, is going to reverse Biden's decision and allow the deal to go through.
We will continue to monitor all of that. And of course, deals can be changed and there can be a new deal put on the table, and who knows where that could possibly go. We have been talking with Ryan Young. Ryan is the senior economist at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Ryan, tell us a bit about CEI. Also, where can folks find you on the web?
CEI is a think tank based in Washington, and we cover all sorts of regulatory issues both in America and around the world, and our website is CEI.org.
Ryan Young of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Ryan, thank you for being back with us.
Thank you.